It's the love you receive and the love you give. That's it. That's all you're going to take with you. That's a relationship. Mm. That's what a relationship is. The love you receive and the love you give. That's it. Like, if anything beyond that, man, it's just extra, you know? And so that's when I was like, okay, I got to start doing things differently. I got to start changing the way that I approach my life. And so that's when I really dove into like the warrior ethos life. And like people, I think people who saw me, they're like, oh man, he's successful in his business. He's got a great family. Dude, I did. I had all those things. But you know what I was missing? My heart was not right.
This episode of the podcast is brought to you by LarClean. A while ago, my wife and I decided that we were going to permanently switch to solutions to clean our house that were safe to use around our kids and our pets. And LarClean offers exactly that. They're powerful enough to be used in a medical setting and safe enough to be used around kids. In fact, there's no bleach, no alcohol, and it still kills 99% of germs. So if you're listening to this podcast and you want to give it a try, head over to LarClean.com and use code THINKING10 at checkout to save 10% off your order. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Frozen Soft Serve here in Utah. They service everywhere from Ogden to Nephi, and the best part is they make rentals super easy. They bring in the soft serve for you, the machines, they pack it out, and then enjoy their 7 flavors of Dole Whip and all of the soft serve that you can eat. It's great for businesses, customer appreciation, and employee appreciation days. And the best part is you don't have to do anything except call them and reserve it. So go to frozensoftserve.com. That's frozen with a PH. Check out the link in the description of this podcast episode. And thank you so much for listening.
Wait, what's up, Austin?
What's up, man?
How are you, dude?
I'm doing good.
I don't do any fancy intros, so
that's
this is
all
it.
Right.
And I'm super glad to have you here and for your companies and everything. But for everybody who, and I usually don't do this, but actually I want to start with this question. What got you into business? How did you get started with all of your brands and everything like that, man?
Well, it depends on how far you want to go back.
Yeah. However far you want to go, dude.
All right. So the first, my mom, okay, we'll start there, right? She's the one that birthed me. So, and she is a freaking saint. Like, yeah. My dad used to joke, like, man, if your mom prays, God listens. So you better be careful. So she lovingly refers to me as her laziest child. Okay. But then after that, she'll say, unless he has the right motivation.
Yeah.
And she's like, Austin's just never been the type to just do things because someone tells him to do it. He needs to have some sort of motivation. And I remember the first time I tried to get a job, I think I was 15 years old. And there was a guy that I went to church with who owned this company called Computers Inc. And I was like, hey man, I want to work for you. Cause at the time he was paying like $15 an hour. And that was huge. Like, we're talking, this is like 25 years ago, you know? And, he's like, all right, man, I'll tell you what. You come over to my house. I got a giant peach tree in my backyard. It's probably got a couple thousand peaches on it. I want you to pick every single peach off that tree. Whoa. If you can do it, I'll give you a job. All right.
So you're like done.
So I got there, called two friends. I was like, hey, guys. I was like, I need help getting peaches off this tree. And man, I was climbing in and out of those branches. It is not pruned. It is not a healthy tree. I mean, it was sagging to the ground with how many peaches. And I spent 6-7 hours just picking peaches, getting all cut up. And he came back and he's just like, holy crap. He's like, you actually got every single one. I guess he had hired kids in the past and they would always leave, you know, 40 or 50. And so he would be able to keep those to eat. You know, the others he really didn't need. And anyway, so that was the first time I got a job. He hired me on the spot. He's like, man, if this is how you work, you know, and And like I said, it depends on the motivation. So that was the first time I kind of got a taste of, you know, you get what you work for. And then a couple years later, this is actually a really cool story. But the first time I started my own business, I was 17 years old and I got suspended from high school for it. Yeah.
Right on. Yeah. Sounds like we're similar. I have a funny story about that too. But go ahead.
Well, so in Las Vegas, you know, I don't know. It's an interesting town. That's where I grew up. I grew up in Las Vegas. And somebody in our school district, they went and took a lawsuit to the school district because their child was fat. And they won and they took out all candy, soda, fried food, everything out. And I was like,
whoa.
Yeah, they like blamed it on the school. It's like, guys, come on, personal responsibility. You know,
yeah,
it's
at
like,
some point you have to.
We,
yeah.
we all have our own choices. We do what we want.
Yeah.
And I don't care either which way,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah. It
doesn't but matter. Then I, at the time, this is 20 something years ago. So I was like, hey, the dollar store has candy bars, 3 for $1. I bet I could take those to the school and sell them for $1 a piece. You know, it's supply and demand, right?
That's right, dude.
So I did it. I took $25, filled my backpack. I took all my books out and just put candy bars in there. And dude, within a week, people were calling me the candy man. And they would like, they'd chase me down the hall, be like, candy man, candy man.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I'd sell them whatever. And after 3 weeks, I had two guys working for me. I was averaging like $400 or $500 a week.
Yeah.
And which is good money. I mean, guys, this is like,
yeah, you're well, and you're selling candy.
I'm a kid. Yeah. I'm a kid. Like awesome. I'm in high school. I don't need a lot of money. And anyway, then I snuck out during, I was an aide for the like, what is the attendance office or something? So I snuck out because it was during, you know, how they have like staggered lunch periods.
Yeah.
So I kind of snuck out of there and started selling during lunch, even though I was supposed to be in class in my student aid period. Yeah. And the principal came up behind me when I was doing it. And anyway, took me to the dean's office and they sat me down next to this kid who was handcuffed to his chair because he brought a knife to school trying to like shank someone.
Oh,
and I'm sitting there. I'm like, he's like, hey, what'd you do? And I was
my God,
bro, I was selling Reese's,
you know, selling candy.
And so then
that's awesome.
My mom comes in and she's like, what the hell? She's like, I praised him for like finding a way to start a business, even though he's super busy, you know, and because I was playing baseball and, you know, school's not tough. It's a lot of work. And anyway, so they suspended me for 2 days and my mom just hung out with me, took me to the movies. We ate lunch. Like my mom was super cool about it. She's like, whatever. Those people are idiots. She's like, you just do you. You
know? At some point you gotta be like, dude. How is this happening?
Yeah.
Like,
are you kidding me?
Yeah.
This is crazy. Then they tried to take my money. They're like,
school did?
Yeah. They're like, how much money did you make? You need to turn that over.
I was like, no way.
I was like, I didn't make any today. It was in my sock.
Yeah.
I was usually like a sugar drug dealer. Like, you know,
you've been like, good luck, dude.
Yeah. You're not taking my money. Yeah. I worked hard for that money.
Bro, that's awesome. Yeah. I had a similar thing. And it was actually with candy too.
Really?
I knew the guy was, well, we didn't have. The school was just overcharging. Like we would go to the credit card place and candy bars would be like $3 or $4 or whatever. Oh and I was like, I know I can get these for cheaper, sell them for cheaper. Like I was like, I can do everything cheaper and still make money.
Yeah.
And same thing though. They were like, they just told me to stop. They were like, dude, you got to quit. Oh. I think I got sent home for the day. I didn't get, but it was funny because, I mainly got ridiculed because I grew up in a little town in Iowa where like everybody like it. I was a set like that's just who I was growing up. Like I just sold stuff kind of like you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I got the award for most likely to be a con artist in high school because in Iowa, in a little poor town in Iowa, like you either work at the farms or the factory. And if someone was trying to sell you, like it was always, that's just the vibe that they gave off.
Yeah.
So they didn't know what like a salesman was called.
And most likely to be a con artist.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And I was like, what the heck? So then I kind of did a, not an FU per se, but like I came back and I do a scholarship there now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where I do, it's the entrepreneurship scholarship. So I pick a girl and a boy, I give them $1,500 if they win. But like, that's the thing is like, we just do all of these things that you called me a con man for. And now I'm, now I'm the biggest scholarship in the school. And mine's like the most applied, one of the most applied for.
You know, it's funny because I was never a great student.
Yeah.
And again, it comes back to my mom called me her laziest child, like homework, forget about it. It's not, and it's not that I wasn't smart. You know, even though when I was young, they actually told my mom that, I mean, we can't say this anymore, but they called me retarded. They told my mom because I didn't read until like second grade.
Right.
Okay. So listen, no, my, straight up, they called me retarded. They're like, your son's special.
Yeah.
Right. And, my mom's like, no, my son's fine, you know, but they're saying I needed like special needs courses and stuff.
Yeah.
And, what's crazy is my mom came in for a parent teacher conference. I was in second grade and it was, right before Christmas break. And that teacher's like, oh, your son is the most improved reader in our class. And my mom's like, what?
Yeah.
I've been working with him at home. He doesn't read.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, every book in class, these books, he reads them perfectly. My mom's like, hey, can I take one of those home? So she brings it home. She has me sit down. I read it perfectly. And she's like, what the crap?
Yeah.
So then she pulls one off the shelf, same reading level. I can't read a word. So through some deduction, she realized that I memorized every book in class. And she was asking me questions because kids were making fun of me.
Yeah. So
I got motivated and I was like, well, okay, I can't read, but I'm smart enough. I could figure out every word that goes on every page, every picture. And I memorized every book in class.
Oh,
and my mom was like, my son is not stupid. He's not retarded. He's not any, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, again, I credit a lot to my mom. My mom, she's like, she's everybody's mom too. Like if you ever come to my house, dude, she will treat you like a son. First time she meets you, she'll give you a big hug. She'll feed you all the things, you know?
Yeah.
And she was always super supportive of me in spite of all the, like, I think back, if things would have been just a little bit different, if she would have allowed them to tell her that I was special.
And then believed it.
Yeah. Cause think of what that would have created for me in my thoughts about who I was. And so, yeah, I got to give her a lot of credit, a lot of shout out, you know?
Yeah. That's interesting. And I like how you mentioned like just finding what you like, because I feel like our story is really similar. Like I didn't really like I grew up in high school thinking that I hated reading. Like I wasn't very good at it. And I didn't like any of the books that they gave us, all of the books that they make you read, right? Yeah. Like I can't even remember them because I was like, I don't want to read these. These are stupid. I don't want to do it. But then what was crazy was I got out of high school and the first self-help book, somebody gave me this book, that was by, it was a, I don't know. It was a thought. It was like, As a Man Thinketh or something like that.
Okay, nice.
And I opened it up and I was like, oh, this book's awesome. So then I like went down the rabbit hole and like realized that I actually love reading. I just didn't want to read that shit that you gave me.
Exactly.
and then I kind of came full circle because now I actually love the classics. Like I love some of the older ones like Paradise Lost and some of the older ones that people like, I'm Russian, half Russian. So like some of the old Russian ones like Brother Karamazov and stuff like that. So I like actually figured out like, oh, I actually like these, but you didn't pitch it like that. You just told us that we had to read it.
Yeah.
And it was like,
I was the thing is I just didn't like people telling me what to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have always just been very, I mean, a pain in the ass, really.
Yeah.
I'm more just once I set my mind on something, it's do or die, you know? Which is probably why I went into the military eventually. Cause I wanted missions. I wanted things that challenged me that forced me to kind of take my personality and put it into it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
how was that? I mean, I know a lot of entrepreneurs who are veterans. Mm-hmm. It seems like that's a pretty common theme. At least, I don't know, like the circle that I run in, there's a lot of people who I know who are entrepreneurs who are veterans as well.
Yeah. And I don't think it's not always the easiest because think about it. You're being told what to do all the time.
Right.
You know, and there's really not a lot of kickback. Like you can't mouth off and not get in trouble, you know?
Right.
I think I had a hard time in the military at certain points because so I worked intelligence. Mm-hmm. Intelligence is a very demanding job, you know? And I just remember there were so many times where I felt like we were doing things that either weren't necessary, could have been done a lot better if they would have just given me some autonomy. Mm, right.
Yeah.
And I remember when I first got in, man, I was so gung ho. Right. I mean, balls to the wall went into it and I ranked up. So in the Air Force, they have this thing called below the zone and it's on a point system. So you can rank up faster based on college credits, PT scores, how well you did in basic training, how well you did in your, on your testing. And so below the zone allows you to get, E4, which is enlisted fourth rank up. And it allows you to get that usually 6 to 8 months before all of your peers. Mm. So I was like, I'm going to get that. Right. I went all the way, got it. Then they were like, hey, you can test for staff sergeant, which is E5. You know, I was like, dang man, I've only been in for 2.5 years. I'm already testing for staff sergeant. Mm-hmm. Like it's almost unheard of.
Right.
So I busted my ass to learn the manuals. And dude, they were freaking thick.
I would imagine. Yeah.
Oh my God. And they were dry. Like if I never have to see another acronym in my life, it'll be too soon. You know what I mean? Like it might as well be Chinese half the time because you're like, what does that acronym mean? What is it?
Right,
and then
right.
Some of them, they're the same acronym, but they mean two different things depending on the context, you know? So ridiculous.
That reminds me of like my accounting degree.
Yeah.
Like, as far as like the dryness of the book and all that. Yeah, it's terrible.
I remember just going through with that yellow highlighter. And I mean, after a while, I'm ready to just punch walls. And I did it, right? I buckled down. I was studying hours and hours a day, took my test, ended up getting the second highest score on the test. And this test, on average, people are scoring like 69%, 72%, somewhere in there. Mm-hmm.
And I
got like an 88.
Yeah.
And so I was like, yes, because out of those three huge manuals, they ask you 100 questions.
Wow.
100 questions. So it is, I mean, it's brutal.
Yeah.
Absolutely brutal.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I pass the test. So they're like, hey, you've been selected, staff sergeant select. But then they're like, you know what? You can't actually tack on your rank for 18 months.
Oh, dang. That's
wait. So I'm a staff sergeant, but not really. And you're not going to pay me as one. And they're like, well, there's people who have been senior airmen for like 4 or 5 years. We need to help them catch up.
You're like, no way. Dude.
Hell no. That dude's sitting on his duff doing nothing. Like, I've been working my ass off to get here. Yeah. And you guys are basically saying, hey, you got to calm down.
Right, right.
You know,
right,
that's right. When I was like, you know what?
Which I can't do this weird, forever. Man. Yeah, that's so weird.
Yeah.
It's so crazy how people will just do those things that are just so counterintuitive to the culture of of something
it's anti-American.
Yeah. It's something as serious too as like a military team.
Yeah.
Like, dude, I don't care if you're 5 or you're 50, you have to, if you can't do this when it needs to be done, like
and get another job.
Yeah. It's nothing personal. Something. Like we can't have it on the team.
That's why I feel, you know, if you actually look at it, over 50% of all military, like missions and things like that are privately contracted now.
Right.
Which is kind of sad.
That's crazy.
It's crazy, but it's because the efficiency is just not there. And that's one of the reasons I didn't feel like I could keep going.
Like the bureaucracy.
There's way too much bureaucracy, way too much red tape. And they don't promote based on your ambition. They don't promote, you know, based on how good you are. It's time and service, who you know. I mean, there is a point system, but even that can be, you know.
Yeah, even then it's not at the top of the priority list.
Because you still have to be, especially if you go to the National Guard, that's even worse because you have to go through like interviewing process.
Oh,
and so it's like then they get to pick their favorites, their drinking buddies and stuff like that.
Yeah, I don't know how that would work in an interview. I mean, I guess that's kind
of why. People might get pissed about me saying some of this, but look, the military's not all, you know, it's not all it shows in Hollywood either.
Right. Well, there's the real side to it that people should know.
Yeah, I mean, look. There were some really, really cool missions that I got to be a part of. Like, awesome. I mean, I worked all kinds of targets, Middle East, China, Russia, counter drug, you know, cartels, all of it.
Yeah.
And cause I was in for 10 years, you know, I got a lot of experience, but man, there was a lot of just sitting around. There was a lot of just sitting there and like, well, we just need you to kind of keep that seat warm in case something happens.
Mm, yeah.
What? Mm-hmm. Why?
It's tough.
We're wasting money, wasting time, you know?
Well, and I think it's important to note in this, and I do this for a few of my episodes, but it's like everybody's experience is different.
Yeah.
And that's what matters. Like you can't invalidate someone's experience, but there's also things that people should know about. Like I've been involved in a lot of those. I spoke at a conference like a year and a half ago with a bunch of veterans, in business. And I felt super like I shouldn't have been there. I was like, I don't know why you asked me to be here, dog. Cause I like, I even gave the lady, I was like, I don't know if I should be here, but I know like 4 people who were, you know, could do this. They're like, no, we want you. I was like, all right. But I met a lot of people there whose story was just, you know, like they love everything about it. And they still, I think 2 things can be true, right? I can love everything about it and love the mission, right? And everything that it stands for, but also have some issues that we should get resolved.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't see why those are mutual excuses.
The fact though, that you went to that and spoke, you did belong there. And let me tell you why. I'll tell you. So I have 4 kids. Uh-huh. Okay. And obviously kids are dumb. Like, no, they do things that are so incredibly dumb. And
you're like, I don't know how that passed through.
What were you thinking?
Yeah, I don't know how that passed through the action gate.
But at the same time, sometimes I look at them and I'm like, man, you're a freaking genius. Like,
yeah.
Or you're just so in tune with what actually matters. I feel dumb.
Yeah.
I am freaking dumb. Right. Like,
yeah.
And so sometimes when you get more green people to speak among these like giants, sometimes those are the ones that connect the most.
Yeah.
Because you're still humble. You're still hungry. Right. You're still in a position where you feel like you can grow and I don't know, and still offer something.
Yeah.
Like kids have no fear, right? Jumping. they could know absolutely nothing about it. They'll still jump in.
Right.
You know, I was at my daughter, my youngest, she got sick on her birthday this year. And so we kind of postponed it. So yesterday my wife's like, hey, we're going to the trampoline park to kind of do a redo on my daughter's birthday.
Yes.
Bro, I'm 37 years old, man. Trampoline parks are not favorable to me anymore. Like, and my daughter was just so jacked about me getting out there and doing tricks and stuff.
Yeah.
But today I could barely get out of bed. I was trying to stretch and like, man, I got to get to the chiropractor. But what was so cool is they have like those Ninja Warrior obstacle courses.
Yes. Yes.
Dude, my kids, no fear. And me, I'm sitting there, I'm 37. Like I should not be scared, but I was let's see, what are the chances of me breaking an ankle on this on this obstacle? And then I'm looking at this bar. It's one of those you jump like a pull-up.
Oh,
bar,
yes,
but
yes.
It kind of swings. And I'm like,
am I going to tear my shoulder?
Like, let's see. What's this worth? Like, cost-benefit ratio, you know? Yeah. But my kids just run right by me and jump on. Like,
right.
And so I guess what I'm saying is there's so much you can learn from the people who seem like they don't know very much.
Yeah.
But it sometimes... Another good example. My best friend, okay, he works for Edelman Financial. He manages like, okay, this dude is so humble. All right. Like I worked out with him at the gym for like 4 years. And most of the time, dude, we were just bros, right? Just joking around, like not even our workouts were not that serious.
Yeah,
you know, but we had such a good time. And so one day my parents are complaining about their financial advisor. So I go to him knowing that's what he does, but we just don't talk about it that much.
Right.
And I'm like, hey, man, how much money do you actually like manage for people? He's like, well, I think the last time I looked, it was like 980 million, but I think we broke a billion last week. And I'm like,
what? F off.
You know, I was just like, I've known you for how long? I had no idea you were like, he's like, yeah, I'm usually number one or two in the company.
Yeah.
I say what? You know?
Yeah.
And, but what's cool about this guy is he told me most of his clients, if you were to meet them, he's like, dude, you'd walk in and be like, how's that person rich?
Yeah.
How is that? Like, he's like, I have this one client. They come in no t-shirt and overalls. and he's like, they look like the hickest couple of dudes you've ever seen. And you know what they own? Artificial turf. And he's like, dude, they make like 20 something million a year on artificial turf.
Dude. What a crazy business.
Yeah.
What a crazy business.
But it's just, that's the thing, man. This whole don't judge a book by its cover type, you know, but.
No, I like that you bring that up because I learned that at a really young age. Like I wrestled and did jiu-jitsu, and I'll never forget the first time we were at a tournament. We had the number one guy. So we were at a state tournament and we on our roster, there's 14 wrestlers, 10 of us are ranked in the top 10 in the state.
Nice.
We're going up against another school. We're like, we're about to trash these guys. And not only that, but like, if you're familiar with wrestling, they go out before and they pick which weight you start at. So you don't always start at 103. So you might start at heavy or you might start in the middle. And that plays a big role in like points and stuff. So anyway, we got the die. We started like 130 and that's our number two guy.
Yeah.
And we didn't know who the team we were wrestling was. And so, and there's always a good thing and a bad thing about that, right? Like sometimes not knowing helps you.
Yeah.
So we didn't know. And our guy goes out there and we're just like, this guy, it's over. We're done. Like we're going to win and that's going to set the tone and we're going to go. And the first 45 seconds, number two in the state's on his back.
Oh,
and I was like, what the fuck? And this kid, you look at this kid and he's lanky, like never touched a weight in his life. Right. We're like, and our guy's stocky. He's big. And I was like, that was the first time when I was like, wow, dude, I am never going to look at somebody who I think is skinny and lanky and be like, I'm going to kick your ass.
Yeah.
Cause like, there's no way.
I got a buddy just like that. He probably weighs, dude, I bet he weighs a cool 130.
Yeah.
Like he's not a big kid at all.
Right.
But man, you shake his hand and you're like,
yeah, you're like, I'm out of here.
That dude is strong.
Yeah.
Like his muscles are so tense all the time.
And
dude, he was at a party actually for UVU. And this kid got in his face and I wasn't there, but my brother-in-law was. And my brother-in-law was like, dude, I've never seen somebody get knocked out so fast.
Yeah.
Like, cause he dude, just,
you just look,
he
you
told look, the kid too. And the kid was big. He was, I think he was a football player for either BYU or U of U.
Yeah.
And yeah, he was like getting in his face. He's like, look, man, you don't want to go here. You don't want to go here. He's like, just walk away right now. Just
let's
walk.
Go. Yeah.
And he's like, whatever you know, this and that. Yeah. So anyway, the kid doesn't leave him alone. Just one hit. Knocked him out. And what's crazy is someone called the cops and the cops came. They're looking at this dude and they're looking at him and they're like,
what happened?
Just go home.
Yeah. Everybody just leave. Yeah. Those are the cool stories.
Gave him a free pass.
Yeah.
Like, dude.
But that's what you're saying. Like, cause then I worked in business. Like I've been in business for a long time. Like that's actually one of the reasons I started this podcast was because everybody kind of looks up to these billionaires that you think are billionaires, right? But the guy next door who owns that tile company makes 10 times more than all of these software companies combined. And I only know that's a low ball because software companies don't make money at all, period.
Well, most of them go under really quickly.
Like tech companies, these big ones they're all running
on debt.
Red.
Yeah. No, it's true. And usually they project 6-7 years before they turn a profit.
Which is wild.
It's crazy.
It's crazy. The craziest thing I heard was these unicorns. Like Uber is a good example, became a $1 billion valuation.
Mm-hmm.
Still hadn't made a single dime in profit.
Really?
Yeah, it happens all the time. I'm like, how do you do that? How do we let that happen? Stripe?
Well,
the payment processor? Yeah, I think they just barely turned a profit.
I think they understand though that, you know, it's a long-term play.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it is a gamble. I mean, I play in real estate.
It's the same that's thing, true. That's true.
And it's a long-term play. But, you know, I look at it too, kind of going back to the idea that we really just don't know.
Right. Yeah.
So, for the longest time, I've been kind of that entrepreneur spirited guy, you know, and I told you earlier before we got on here about brand makers, right? We do swag and stuff like that. Well, when I first got to the company, I was just like, I don't know how I'm going to do this. It's commission only. From getting a salary, you know, and it's eat what you kill, you know?
Yeah. For real.
You got to bust it. And I remember I was coming up on my third full year and I was like, you know what? I'm going to sell a million this year. And we're talking, dude, pens, t-shirts.
Yeah.
It's not an easy feat.
No, not an easy.
Most promo companies don't even sell a million. I'm just one rep, you know?
Yeah.
And so I was like, no, I'm going to do it. And dude, I went crazy. Like I became obsessed. I was the first one there, last one to leave. Like I was going to all these trade shows. I was making cold calls, like cauliflower ear type cold calls. Like where I was hitting my ears so much with the phone. And, I remember I was driving in the car. It was like December of that year, driving in the car and I get a text message. My wife's actually driving. I'm in the passenger seat. It says, you just hit 1.3 million in sales.
Nice.
But that whole year I'd pretty much been neglecting my family, my health, my mental health, all these things. Like, I had gotten out of the military that year to focus on that goal. Like that was another thing. I was like, you know what? I'm going to separate. You know, now I was super excited in that moment because not only did I hit my goal, man, I destroyed it.
Yeah.
I mean, I beat it by $300,000 in sales. That's crazy.
Yeah.
And then I remember about a month later, I'm sitting in my office, man. I've never been more depressed in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Never been more depressed in my life. Dude, I was ready to end my life. Like I was like, what the hell am I doing here? What am I doing?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I lost my best friend to suicide. So that's like a really sore spot for me. And that's actually the first time I came up with the idea for Warrior Ethos Life. It was after I had lost my friend and I came up with this phrase, never surrender the journey. right? It's okay to surrender to God. It's okay to like surrender in situations where you need to just kind of let nature run its course. Like that's okay. You're not giving up. There's a difference.
I totally understand.
So I vowed when I lost my best friend, because I didn't even know he was struggling.
That's the scariest part.
Oh, it was terrible, man. I had already planned to go home to Vegas at the time. I was stationed in Nebraska and I was planning to go home, and I had already like set up to match up with him, you know? And this friend, like, he slept over at my house more in high school than he did his own house. That's how like close we were. And, but after that, I, you know, vowed that would never be me. And so I hopped online and I actually got help. I was like, therapist in my area, you know, I need to talk to somebody. 'Cause you know, I don't feel like I have PTSD. I think I have, I definitely had experiences and I saw things that you can't delete. You're right. Like I can't just go in my brain and delete it. You know, there's no trash can available to empty, you know? Anyway, so I found this site that had these little profiles of different therapists. I'm scrolling through and I see this guy. I'm like, man, I feel like I know him, but I didn't. Like, I'm pretty good with faces.
Yeah.
I was like, I do not know that guy. But I was like, you know what? If I feel like I do, if I feel a connection, I'm going to reach out. Called the number that was on there. Didn't answer, so I left a voicemail. But then on his little blurb, it said, you can text me. So I just shot him a text. I was like, hey, man, military veteran. I really could use somebody to talk to you right now. Here's the situation. And he texts me within like 15 minutes. He's like, I can meet you at 9 a.m. tomorrow. It's like, oh gosh, thank you. You know, because it's like, I can make it till 9, you know? My next thought that was like, man, you're probably the shittiest therapist in the world if you have an opening at 9 a.m. tomorrow.
You're like, how's this happen?
Yeah, how's this happen? And I was like, no, that was God looking out. Like, you know, take it for what it is. Well, then, man, I came home normal time, 5 o'clock. And my youngest at the time, she was 4, Rayleigh. And man, I opened that door and she just, daddy, you know, and just gave me the biggest hug. Man, I went up to my room and I sobbed like a child.
Yeah.
Because I almost gave that up.
Mm.
And for what? Money, status, business?
Mm-hmm.
Like what? And it was the kind of the first like real turning point for me where I was like, okay, my daughter, and you know, I have 3 daughters and 1 son. She only understood 2 things in that moment. Number 1, I'm her daddy. And number 2, I came home.
Mm-hmm.
That's all she cares about.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't know anything about money. She doesn't know anything about my military career, about the shit that I've had to wade through. She doesn't know about any of that. It doesn't matter to her. She loves me because I'm her daddy and I came home. And really, in this life, what matters?
Mm.
It's the love you receive and the love you give. That's it. That's all you're going to take with you. That's a relationship.
Mm.
That's what a relationship is. The love you receive and the love you give. That's it. Like if anything beyond that, man, it's just extra, you know? And so that's when I was like, okay, I got to start doing things differently. I got to start changing the way that I approach my life. And so that's when I really dove into like the warrior ethos life. And like I think people who saw me, they're like, oh man, he's successful in his business. He's got a great family. Dude, I did. I had all those things. Mm-hmm. But you know what I was missing? My heart was not right.
Yeah.
And since my heart wasn't right, how could I get my mind right? You can't.
Yeah.
Until you know your purpose and your why, your ethos. That's what the ethos is. It's the purpose and the character, the why that drives the decisions you make. That's what ethos means. Until you have that, dude, your thoughts are going to be sporadic, chaotic, all over the place, you know? And then you're going to start trying to find things in the world that will, you know, fill the void. They don't.
Right.
If anything, they just accentuate more of what you don't have. I'm telling you, I've been there. So like when I meet with people, a lot of people come to me because they want advice on how to invest in real estate and short-term rentals, vacation rentals. But I'll tell you what I'm really trying to do is get to their heart, because I know if I can get to their heart, man, it's going to start guiding their mind. And then they're going to be able to navigate business like they've never done before, you know? And yeah, I'll use tactics that I learned in military intelligence. I'll use, you know, different brain hacks, different, you know, discipline hacks, things that will get you to a next level. But look, I could teach you all the money making things in the world, but until those 2 core pieces are there, forget about it.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. Because even, I like that. And what's, I had a really humbling conversation with a buddy of mine a couple of weeks ago that was on this same vein, because we both of us had grown up in the Midwest, and the Midwest is pretty poor. Like 90% of our school was on free or reduced lunches. Like I think actually everybody was at some point, because they were just like,
wow.
Even the kids who can't afford it, like at this point, they're the only ones paying, so it doesn't matter.
It's crazy, because in my mind, I'm like, Iowa, it must be a farming community. You guys probably have the best, like, you know, farmers markets.
Right, right.
You know?
No, dude, it was cool, but it was like mainly factory and farming. And okay. So we just grew up really poor. Like, I don't know. Like, if you Google it right now, the average income in our hometown is probably like 30 grand a year. Isn't that wild?
That's
but
wild.
But that's how we grew up. And we were talking, he called me, we talk about money and business every once in a while. And I was just like, man, I said the same thing you did. I was like, bro, we grew up on $30,000 a year in the shittiest town in Iowa.
Yeah.
And we figured out how to have fun and be happy. And, 26,000 a year. That's what it
was. That's the average.
Wow. That's the average. And we were like, we figured out how to have fun and be happy. And that, I think that's what's scarier. I mean, it kind of freaked him out, because I had already come to terms with it, but I was like, do you realize, like, we're trying to chase six figures, seven figures, eight figures. We were happy with low fives, dude.
Yeah.
Some people, like, each of us had made more than that in a month.
Have and you seen the studies on that?
Yeah.
Where they took, like, the happiness level from people in the, like, lowest of low poverty versus those making $500,000 plus a year.
Yeah.
It's a 1% difference.
Yeah, dude. We're 1%, chilling, dude.
Which
we're
is chilling. Like nothing.
Yeah. So I was like, what are we doing, man? We can be like, we can be happy in an apartment in our hometown.
Yeah.
Like what are we doing? Like, why it didn't change then. It's probably not going to change now. And like, the only thing different was like, we knew we had relationships. I think, you know, cause small town, we like knew small town, dude.
Yes.
Like, I grew up in one faith, but like the parties were at the Catholic church or the Baptist church. Like the breakfast runs. Anyway, I'm kind of going off, but it's
crazy. I mean, even the Mexican community.
Yeah.
So I'm friends with a lot of people in the Mexican community, and their parties and weddings are so fun.
I know.
And dude, it's like potluck.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, it's there's like, none of this catered, you know, covers over the seats.
Same thing.
White linens. And it's like, dude.
Yeah, Polynesians too. You put all the food on the same table.
And there's dancing.
Yeah.
And there's like, and I'm just like, we're doing this wrong.
Yeah,
we're doing absolutely. This wrong.
We're trying to do something. Know? Well, we're just going at, you're swimming against the current. I think, I like what you said about surrender, because it's not the same, but it's just like, it's like flowing, right? Like a river doesn't fight its path.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's super, but if you leave a rock there long enough, it'll get eaten, right?
That's
it'll,
amazing.
It'll move. And anyway, that's, but this is a good time to talk about, you know, so you have a warrior ethos, life. We got the hats. What else do you do? You got short-term rentals.
Well, warrior ethos life is my main gig now. Mm-hmm. And like I said, it's basically training mostly men. I do have some women, like, I'm not saying you can't, but I tell every woman that comes in my program, like, look, I'm a man. I'm going to understand man things.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to be mansplained to, you know, like, so just be patient with me. Cause you know, and eventually I'm hoping to bring on like a, you know, a woman's coach that can
kind of piece.
Take care of both.
There's nothing wrong with men's spaces and women's spaces. I've lost that.
No.
Cause you can't.
And most of the women in my program, they're actually in as a couple. So it's
that's even better.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And it is, it's awesome when they're doing it together. That's honestly my favorite because that's how it should be, you know? So I had the real estate going. I started real estate 3 years ago, pretty much Airbnb vacation rentals. Cool. I started with, I bought my first one December 2019 and COVID
right on.
3 months later and I was remodeling the first one. So I hadn't even made a cent. I was like, wow, worst time in the world to invest in vacations. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
But I just kept at it. I actually had a mentor and he's like, Austin, what are you afraid of? I was like, well, I'm afraid of going bankrupt. That's what I'm afraid of.
Yeah.
He's like, all right, well, let's go there. Let's say you went bankrupt. What would you do? He's like,
yeah,
I don't know. He's like, well, who would you live with? I was like, well, probably my in-laws, you know,
yeah,
with my four kids. You know?
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, so you'd have a roof over your head. Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. And he's like, would they give you a bed to sleep on? Yeah. Food to eat. They wouldn't let you starve. Yeah. So you'd be starting out at your lowest point. You'd be starting out better than 85% of the human population since the beginning of time. And that's your worst case scenario.
Yeah.
I was like, okay.
Yeah.
I guess
I love going, that thought exercise though. Yeah. I love that. I take people through that because it's so counterintuitive, but it's so, but it's like the one that I took him through. I was like, bro, what happens? We move back to our hometown and make $30,000 a year. We're happy as shit.
Yeah. That's
right. What are you talking about? Let's fucking go. Sorry.
Well, no, okay. So when my wife and I first got married, we were so poor. We got married in 2008.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Arguably the worst recession since the Great Depression, right? Right. So it's like my wife was, she was making the money. She had graduated hair school. I was taking 17 credits at college and I was working at the Buckle. Okay.
Yeah.
That was the only place I could get a job. Well, the Buckle at the mall.
The clothing store. And they pay commission.
They pay commission. Yeah. It's like, I think it's $7 an hour plus like 2% commission or something.
Yeah. So it's kind of like okay.
So you average out to like 13 bucks an hour, I think. Okay. Anyway, but then my wife, she was working at a salon. Dude, they handed her a notice. They said, hey, we're closing our doors tomorrow. And we had no heads up. And we were already poor. Like, we're college students. Like, we're poor. And I remember just thinking, like, crap, what am I going to do? You know, so then we had a little bit saved up, not much. And she was putting in applications everywhere. I mean, everywhere. She couldn't even get an interview at Walmart.
Yeah.
Dude, that's how bad it was back then.
Gosh, dude.
And I called in a favor. My cousins had a connection with a car wash. Yeah. And so I became a dryer at a car wash, drying cars. And then I got my wife a job there as well. But they wouldn't let us work the same hours because apparently some couple had gotten divorced over it because they were working together. And so we were like, I was doing school 17 hours. I was working like 32 part-time jobs.
Yeah.
And man, we were broke. Like I would, this is disgusting. Okay. I would stay after hours at the car wash and I would clean out the catch in the vacuum cleaners to see if I could find spare change.
Oh man.
And I would save it up. And then my wife and I would get one meal to share at the fast food and we'd go to the dollar theater. Yes, I'm old. There used to be dollar theaters.
Yeah,
there used
to be dollar theaters.
but that's what we did. And dude, it was disgusting. When you're going through like
vacuum
pet hair and like all gross, dude, it's nasty. Looking back, I'm like, what were we desperate, bro?
Yeah.
But I wanted to take my wife out. Like I wanted us to have something to do, you know, and we just weren't making enough otherwise.
Yeah.
So I found a way, you know, and it's like, you know what? I can get through that to make this happen, you know, but it's the same thing though. I can't remember a happier, I mean, I would say my wife and I are happier now.
For sure.
But more because we've matured as a couple.
Well, and you went through that. Like you guys know that nothing, like we've been through making $1 million a year, whatever you make, right? And we made, and we were digging and changing vacuum catches. And like,
yes,
you know what I mean? It's not about either one of those things. Yeah. It's about us.
Well, and like you, I grew up poor.
Yeah.
So my dad was a plumber originally and down in Arizona. And, you know, I was born in the 80s. And there was a recession in the 80s, like a construction recession. And
I do remember that.
Yeah.
It went from like steel and lumber to like whatever.
Yeah, man. And everybody just was out of work. You know, I think my parents were doing a paper route at like 4 a.m. to just make ends meet. My mom was running a daycare out of the house. But one of my earliest memories was my mom crying on Christmas.
Mm.
And I can't remember. I was probably only like, I would say I was like 3, maybe 4 years old. I don't know, but she was crying because she had made homemade Play-Doh for us for Christmas. That was all we could afford, which is like, dude, that's flour, salt, and water.
I mean,
we're talking, this is
crazy
low, you know? And she was crying because she accidentally put the wrong food coloring in and it turned brown. So it looked like shit, you know? Like, but you know, looking, I didn't know.
Yeah.
I didn't know. I didn't care. Right.
Yeah.
Like, Children don't, man, they really don't care about that stuff until they're introduced to other people that have
until they find it. Yeah, no, I was talking to my buddy about that exact same thing. I was like, bro, my daughter, like, I was like, I don't, because I told him this, this is how the conversation started. I was like, my wife's not really my family because my daughter wouldn't give two, she would be happier than she is now if I stayed home all day and played with her.
Yeah.
Right. Like she doesn't care. She doesn't know the difference between $20,000 and $100,000 a year.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I work obviously because I have like, you know, I have things, you know, I find fulfillment and purpose in certain things. But like, yeah, it's just that, right? Like,
well, and
they just want me to play with them. They don't,
you know, my kids, It, I mean, they definitely like stuff.
Yeah, well, you know, yeah,
stuff is fun.
Yeah, that's
for about 10 minutes. You know,
yeah, like, that's true.
Like you'll buy them this expensive toy, and then it's like 10 minutes later, it's like, man.
Yeah, and you're not with it here. Like,
no, it's, that's why actually. So my family, we're getting ready to move down to Bryce Canyon area,
Valley. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what I love about it down there is the kids can just explore,
like Cedar. World.
It's a small town called Tropic, Utah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just outside of Panguitch, if you've seen that area. Yeah. Yep. So, I mean, it's population 500 people.
Yeah. Only reason I know about that is because I served an LDS mission in Southern Utah.
Did you really? Nice.
Southern Utah.
That's cool. Yeah. Yeah. So in that area, I actually own 22 units down there. And, so it's been booming for us. And then we had this opportunity to buy a property that's like, I, no joke, I saw it in a dream and I was like, this is what I want. Dude. Yeah. It's absolutely amazing. It's like a farm country type house. And it's on like an acre and a quarter and.
Which is a lot in Utah. That's crazy.
It is.
Cause I remember,
here's the thing. I try to tell people when they come in with me, I'm like, okay, the first thing you're going to learn from me is I find the properties that people think are absolute lost causes.
Yeah.
Absolute lost causes. Like they're in a rural town where there's no economy and they're like, oh, there's no way this is, you're going to lose so much money. Like if you plug it into AirDNA or something, it's like negative 6.7% cash on cash. And then I pick it up and then I remodel it and then I advertise for it and then I build it out and it's now getting like a 78% return cash on cash. Wow. And people are like, you stole that property. I'm like, it's all about how you analyze, right? So in intelligence, that was my job, right? To predictively analyze a situation as best as possible. Like we'd take whatever information we had, and then we'd try to predictively analyze what could happen or what should happen. Yeah. And so I tried to take that skill set. I was like, how's this going to translate in civilian life? You know? And when I got into real estate, I was like, man, this very much translates.
Well, you're like data.
It's very much.
You're like data analytics.
Yeah.
The only effing thing, like the hardest.
No joke.
Right now.
And this is not like a brag. This is to tell you that the system works because that's what it is. I plug it into my system. I have now 24 units and, you know, most of them are in that area because it's a gold mine. I'll be honest. It's an absolute gold mine.
Yeah.
And I have two other units elsewhere, but last month alone, we did over 100K.
Wow.
100K on 24 units. Yeah. You show me anybody else that's doing that. Like I know guys that own like 500 doors and they're not doing that much.
Right.
You know, it's because their margins are, they're like, oh yeah, we get like a 4.7% cash on cash. And I'm like,
you're like, that's crazy.
I was on a webinar the other day and okay. It's not to say that what they're doing is wrong.
Sure.
They're still making money.
Yeah.
But man, why would you, if you can be doing this or if you can be doing this and you're settling here, why?
Yeah.
Cause this guy was saying, so he's in the same space as me. He's a coach for Airbnb and real estate. And he's like, yeah, I don't consider a property unless it makes $800 a month. 800? Are you doing long term?
Yeah.
That's because that is not a short term, like my profit. I'm like not looking unless it does like $8,000.
Oh, wow.
Because why? The properties are out there. They're available. I mean, right before I walked in here, I was like, hey, man, I'm finishing up a call with one of my students because I found a property that could cash flow him $34,000 a year.
Yeah, that's cool.
And you know what he has to put into it? $50,000.
Wow.
So he'll make his money. Oh, I don't know what that cash on cash is. It's probably about 70%.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah.
That's like insane. I mean, literally, he's going to be in the positive, 100% in the positive by next year.
Yeah.
You know,
that's insane, man.
And this is on real estate. Most real estate guys are like, hey, it takes, you know, 8 to 10 years to really start like churning.
Yeah. You know,
getting.
Well, that's what's crazy about the whole real estate game is a lot of people are like, oh, I'm going to get my first rental property and be a millionaire. And you're like, dude, I don't know about that. But I mean, obviously there's ways to do it. But the traditional way, this was like guys who are like, I'm going to rent out a property. And
yeah.
I'm like, dude, that's such a big ass headache.
Well, and I'll give this to you for free. This is, and this is the thing. I'm going to start giving all my information for free because I told people, I was like, look, you still have to know how to implement it.
Yeah. What is that? Gary Vee who says like, give the information, sell the implementation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's true because I used to be afraid to tell people like, oh no, this is how I do it. This is how I've been this. And now I'm just like, no, anyone can do it. Anyone can learn it. It's not impossible.
Yeah.
But if you pay me, I can teach it to you in 6 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Or like actually like, I think that's the cool thing about like finding a coach is like, especially one who gives all the info. Cause like I do the same thing with podcasting. People would be like, how do you start a podcast or whatever? How do you make it successful? I was like, they're like, and I had a buddy who said the same thing. He's like, why do you tell people how to do it? Like give away your secret or whatever. I was like, because I've been doing it for 3.5, almost 4 years. They'll quit in 6 months. If they're lucky, they'll quit in 6 months.
Or they'll call you.
Or they'll call me.
Yeah.
And I'll do it for them and it'll be easy. Right. Yep. I was like, I don't know.
I'm that way too. Yeah. Like I would rather, I have it in my mind that, you know what? I should be doing a podcast.
Yeah.
But I don't know how to do a podcast. I don't have time to really go research it. I got so my fingers in so many other things.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? I know a guy.
Yeah.
I know a guy who could probably get me spun up in like 2 weeks, 3 weeks.
Yeah. But that's the crazy thing is like, I'll put it on LinkedIn or whatever else. Like, here's everything you need and exactly how to do it. And here's what you say to ask guests. And I still get people who are like, I don't know how to ask guests. I'm like, what the hell, dude? I just told you how to do it.
I know.
Or I'll do it for you, I guess.
Well, that's why. You know, going back to the real estate thing, it's the same. I tell people, I'm like, hey, look, okay. First of all, you need to look outside of things like AirDNA and BNB Calc and all these, you know, and I use those tools. Don't get me wrong. I use those tools and they give me a pulse on what other people are seeing.
Yeah.
Then I go into the kind of outliers, right? Was it Malcolm Gladwell?
I love the outliers, right?
Yeah. Or Freakonomics. You ever read Freakonomics? Yeah. Same thing. It's talking about things that you don't really think have an impact, but they actually do.
Right, dude.
So right now there's been a huge shift in the way money is spent among young people. Okay. The old status symbol used to be career, car, house, right? If you owned those things, you were a status symbol, right?
Yeah.
Not anymore.
Right.
They don't care if you have a house. They don't care if you have a car. You know what they care about? What experiences can you put on social media?
Yeah, dude.
What experiences can you put on social media so that other people want to be you?
Mm.
I'm telling you, it's true. Like Forbes did an article saying that millennials and younger are willing to spend up to 70% of their income on experiences and travel.
Dude, I'm that guy.
70%.
Yeah. Dude, I have a branded title Impala and a Pilot that my payment's like a baby. It's like $200 or whatever. And it's got a broken bumper and I won't fix it because I'd rather go to Disneyland.
Who cares?
Yeah. I was like,
who cares?
I was like, I'm going to go to Disneyland.
I drove here in a Toyota Corolla.
Yeah.
Now I
agree with you.
I do have an F-350 truck.
Yeah.
But in my head, I'm like, yeah, but it's more cost effective to just come up here in my Corolla because it's just 25 miles away. And I'm like, yeah. I get 36 miles a gallon.
Yeah.
I'm going to just take my Corolla.
And no one cares.
But that's the thing,
no one cares.
But it's because, hey, you know what? That might seem like a small thing. It's like, oh, dude, you're being petty. It's like, yeah, but I live small in a sense. Like I live within well below my means so I can invest big.
Yeah.
And this is how I've been able to take a portfolio of zero. 2019, zero. I had no portfolio. No cash really. I took equity out of my home. I got 60,000 or 50,000 equity out of my home, put a $38,000 down payment on this first Airbnb. And then now we're 3.5 years later.
Yeah.
It's worth almost $6-7 million.
That's crazy, dude.
That's insane.
Yeah. That's awesome, bro.
That's insane.
Very cool.
But it's because I didn't live outside the means. Like I just kept leveraging what was and what we needed. You know, and then it just kept going and kept going and kept going.
And I like how you point out those things because every once in a while I'll train salespeople. And one of my lead gen tactics is super unconventional, but it's like partnerships because I learned this in the car dealership. So what was crazy was I actually sold the most in the year at the dealership one time because I went to a loan officer because like when people don't qualify for their houses, they usually go buy something stupid like a car.
Yeah.
and we found out there was actually a statistic that said if somebody moves into a new apartment or a new house, like within 90 days, they're like 50% more likely to buy a car. Mm-hmm. So I went to the title agency in an apartment next door and I was like, I'll pay for your first 2 months of rent or like half of your closing costs or whatever, up to a certain amount. If you send them to me and they buy a car from me. And I like crushed it. And they were like, how are you doing that? And it was that idea. Like you were saying, like they want experiences. So screw it. We're going to go to these places where like people want experiences, or like no one would ever do that, but actually they do a ton.
Bro, you know what I love about your example? It shows creativity.
Yeah.
That's the thing that, again, this in my program, same thing. I'm like, guys, you got to be more creative. And you know what the other thing I tell people? Stop asking for discounts. No, seriously.
Especially
from your friends. No, because it's you're true, though. It's true. Who they are.
Yeah, well, I just bought my friend just opened an e-commerce business online, and she sent me a link. They're really good family friends of ours. She sent me a link, and it had a discount on there. I was like, send me the real link. Send me the real link. I don't want 10% off.
Yeah.
Like, send me the real link.
No, I mean, I had a guy come and, okay, you can take my man card if you have to. Okay. But like, whatever. I bought a camp trailer. It's the first one I ever owned. Like, I grew up in a poor family. I've never owned one. I never had experience with one.
You're about to tell the story that I just did too.
Go ahead. Really?
Yeah.
Well, so I hired a guy cause I wanted it to get like permanently set up with water, electric and sewage at my new property. Because right now I'm remodeling that house, but so I was like, I need a place to stay. So we just put my trailer there, but I want to be able to use everything and not have to go dump it. And you know, the whole hassle.
Yeah.
So I didn't really know how to do that. So I found a guy, hired him, and I could tell he was like, dude, you don't know how to do any of this. Why do you own a camper? You know? And I'm bro, look. And again, I'll tell you things like, take my man card if you want. I'd rather not be the guy that's like, oh yeah, I know about it.
Yeah.
I was like, dude, shut the hell up. No, you don't.
No, I don't.
Like, what are you going to gain from that?
And by the way, I don't really want to know about it.
Yeah. So, well, and that's the thing. So then I told him, I was like, look, man, if you can just do this for me and just, I don't have to worry about any of it. Yeah. Trust me, I'll pay you.
Yeah.
And so he comes to me with the bill, and I think it was like, cause he checked everything. I mean, he checked the AC unit, the heater, the water heater. He cleaned everything out, set all the hoses, he did it all. And it took him like 2 days. I mean, there was a lot. It's an older camper.
Yeah.
You know, it's probably 10 years old. And he came back, his bill was like $1,500. And I was like, here's $2,000.
Yeah.
He's like, what?
Yeah.
And you know what? That guy, he lost his daughter, baby daughter, 6 weeks prior to that.
Oh, geez.
He's like, man, you don't know what this means to me.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, we're still paying for the funeral.
Yeah, that's,
you know what I mean? And it's like, but that's why you do that. Like, I could have been like, hey, you want to give me a military discount?
Just pay.
Dude, just pay. And you know what? He and I are now like really good friends. Like, we text each other and stuff. He's a super cool guy. Anyway.
Well, but by the way, on that point too, because I had a guy, I bought a trailer too. And I was like, I just want to make sure that it works. I don't know. Even if I knew what was wrong, I wouldn't know how to fix it. So I just paid a guy. I was like, just go through the whole thing.
Yeah.
Tell me what's wrong. And then whatever's wrong, here's my card. Yeah. Go fix it. And they did the same thing. They were like, this is easy. And I'm like, dude, I don't give a shit. I just want it to work.
Yeah.
I got so much other shit that I actually love doing. I don't want to spend time learning something that I don't really.
And don't get me wrong. I'm not against discounts. I'm not against like promotions and stuff like that.
I think there's a mindset.
Yeah.
Well,
and that's the other thing is if I know I'm paying for quality, I won't have to do this again.
Right.
You know, I know if I buy cheap stuff, I'm going to have to replace it.
Yeah. Well, and not only that, but like for me, not asking for a discount isn't about saving money, because a lot of wealthy people I know do try to save money. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not stupid with it, but it's not about that, because I read a book called What Got You Here Won't Get You There.
Yeah.
And it's that thing. It's like, at first you do pay, like it's the dummy tax, right? Like, yeah, dude, you pay so that you can see how it feels.
I think it's the same too with, you ever read Never Split the Difference?
Oh yeah, I love it. Yes.
Okay,
love it.
So I had an opportunity with one of the guys at my company where he was good friends with the VP of that company.
Oh, Black Swan?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. So this is at Brand Makers, actually.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, Brand Makers. Okay. So at Brand Makers, we have a rule. The number one rule, don't be a douchebag. Okay. That's the number one rule, because if you're in a sales, you know, space, it's easy, right? Yeah, it's easy for people to be douchey. And that's not what we want.
Yeah.
Okay. And that includes with each other, right? Yeah. Obviously with the client, you don't want to be that, but with each other. So he came to me and he was super nice about it, you know, and he's like, hey, look, I'm good friends with the VP of this company. I see you have them in the system as your client. And I was like, yeah, man, they've been one of my top three clients for 7 years, you know? And here's the thing is like, we don't want to step on anyone's toes, right? If that's their client, cause we're getting paid commission.
Yeah.
So, you know, having golden clients, unicorn clients, they don't come along very often. And so when you have them, you want to maintain them, you want to keep them. And that's one of these clients. And he says, well, it looks like your assistant did a bad order back in 2021 and the gal's still upset about it. I was like, oh, okay. Let me have a conversation with you. He's like, well, he's like, they told me, or in less words, like they want a fresh face at Brandmakers. Okay. I don't get offended. You know, I was like,
yeah, whatever.
Look, if that's going to help the company, that's fine. But here's the deal. We're going to split it 50-50. You can get all the credit. All those sales are going to show up on your numbers, not on mine, but I want 50% of everything that you sell. And he was like, no, he's like, that's too much. He's like, how about 70-30? I said, no.
Yeah.
I worked 7 years to maintain this client. I put so many days, nights, like tons of energy into this client.
Yeah.
It's worth 50% to me to not have to do anything. Because like I said, I've kind of stepped away from that to move into more of my warrior ethos and my investments.
Yeah.
I still love Brandmakers. I still love that company. I am diehard about them. But I have other things that I'm trying to shift my energy and focus to. So I saw this as an opportunity to do that, right? And not lose out on one of my best clients. And he's like, well, what if we just, you know, we start at 50-50 and then the next year it's 60-40 and then the next year is 70-30 and 70-30 then on out. And I said, no, it's 50-50 or I'll go repair the relationship and I'll keep the client.
Yeah.
Within 10 minutes, he's like, okay, I'll do it. Now, yeah. I'm saying don't discount yourself either. And you do that by when you pay other people what they're worth, you're allowed to ask for what you're worth.
Yeah.
And that's what people miss out on. If you're always asking for a discount, you're always asking to, oh, can I get that cheaper? What do you think people are going to do to you? Yeah. And what do you think you're going to feel obligated to do for them?
Right.
Give a discount.
Right.
Right. It's again, it's a thought. It's a process. You know, what's the book I'm listening to right now? This one is actually blowing my mind. It's, Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself.
Oh, very cool.
Have you read that one?
No,
Yeah, I think I need to buy the actual book because I've just been listening to it. And I guess there's like diagrams and stuff that he
Yeah.
But in that book, it just talks about your mind and how much of, you know, the repetitive, we have like 75% of our thoughts are all the same.
Yeah.
And most of them are negative, right?
Yeah.
And he talks a lot about that and kind of conquering it through meditation and focus and whatever.
Yeah.
But this is something I learned a while ago is if you stop getting into that discount mode, you're never going to feel like you have to discount yourself.
Well, and that's why I think, like, if you never pay full price, why would you expect somebody to pay full price for you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And it's just like, now I don't ask for things I can't afford, right? Yeah. But if I know I can afford it, like, I think one of my favorite rules, everybody has their own opinion about Dave Ramsey, but one of my favorite rules that Dave Ramsey said was he was like, if you can't afford the tip, you can't afford the restaurant.
Mm.
And I was like, that's a baller move.
No, I like that.
Yeah, I like that because it was like, we always tip good.
Yesterday we were at, so it was my daughter's celebration birthday, okay?
She
wanted to go to Texas Roadhouse. I love Texas Roadhouse. Well, last time we went, they just opened one in Spanish Fork close to us. Last time we went, man, our waiter was a schmuck. That guy, I was literally having to like wave the guy down. Like, hey man, I needed some water, you know? Yeah. Like not even a big deal.
Yeah.
And it made me not want to go back. Like I was really frustrated with this guy. I didn't tip him.
Yeah.
Because, and I think he was in the middle of training somebody, but that's when you should be even more on your A game.
Yeah. You got to be like, boom.
Yeah.
Boom, boom.
And anyway, my daughter requested it. So we went back. Our waitress, amazing.
Yeah.
So good. I mean, man, every time my glass got down, she filled it up.
Yeah.
Every time she walked by, even if she was taking food to somebody else, she's like, hey, are you guys okay? Is there anything, you know? And so I think our bill was 80 something bucks and I gave her $100.
Yeah.
I was like, hey, I'm going to tell you right now, our last experience here was terrible.
Yeah.
You were so amazing. And I want you to know how much I appreciate it. You made this whole dinner with my family such a good experience. Our night has just been capped off because of you.
Yeah.
And she was like in tears, you know,
that's one of the best feelings of the
world. Oh, the best, man, the best. And sometimes I'll do it even if like, if a waiter or waitress seems like they're just having a bad day.
Right. Yeah, that's a hard job.
It's a hard, and people hard are ruthless.
Job. And they are fucking assholes.
And this guy that was like, I was not even mean to him.
Yeah.
But I said, look, man, you really neglected us. Like, I mean, I didn't get one refill. We were here for 40 minutes.
Yeah.
I didn't get one refill. Our appetizer was burned like really bad. And we got the cactus blossom. Oh, come on, man. You can't burn that, bro.
Yeah, you can't.
That thing, it's got to be just right. You
right,
know?
Right, right.
Anyway,
right.
So.
Dude, but I love that because that's the kind of mindset that you have to be in to get that back. Like, I do believe in. Yeah, what goes around comes around. Like if you are in them. So I wrote a little white paper once, like the 10 laws of sales. Mm-hmm. And the first law in my book is don't skip the lemonade stand. Like you can't.
Yeah.
You pay. Listen, you go get warm, shitty lemonade and a sugar cookie from a 10 year old entrepreneur.
But they're hustling.
And they charging you a dollar and you give them 10. That's what you have to do.
I love it. You cannot.
Because I get so passionate about that because I'm like, if you are like, no, I don't want that shitty lemonade from a 10 year old. No one, everybody who comes in should beat you up on price and then say no after 10 hours of wasting your time. Like you have to put that out there, dude.
When we were remodeling this house, we were doing the demo and we ripped out all the cabinets and my son, there was like a decorative wagon or something.
Yeah.
So he filled it up with the cabinet doors.
Oh,
and then just went door to door and tried to sell them to people. And I didn't want to tell him like, no, it's like, dude, they wouldn't want just the doors, you know?
Yeah.
I was like, you know what? I'm going to just let him do it.
See what happens.
Dude, he made $5. Nobody bought anything, but they're like,
somebody was like, hey, here.
Yeah, they're like, hey, thanks for coming.
That's what I would do.
I know, which that's what I would like,
do. I'd be like, yeah, sorry, dude.
And you know what? He felt encouraged. Like he didn't make a bunch of money, but he still felt encouraged. You know? And then our first one, we actually took everything out and just put it in the driveway and did like a yard sale. Because the first one we bought, dude, it had so much stuff in it. And it was
wild.
Oh, they just
crazy.
It had been left for 7 years.
Oh wow.
And all the furniture, everything was still inside and it was old, it was raggedy, whatever. So what I did is I took my daughter was 10. And I was like, hey, you're in charge of this yard sale.
Yeah.
I was like, you're in charge of pricing. You're in charge of everything. She made so much money. She made so much money, man. Yeah. My daughter made like, I think it was like $400 something off a bunch of junk. And I was like, what the crap? And she's like, yeah, people, I would tell them it was $2 and they'd give me $5, or I'd tell them it was $10. They'd give me $20. I was like, man.
Because that's what you're supposed to do.
It is.
When you see the kids out there, you're like, this is our future. This is what it means. And
that's awesome.
And so, yeah, because if you're a sales guy, I'm like, the first thing I used to do is I would send people like secret shopping. That was the first thing I would do as a trainer. And then the second thing I would do is if it was summertime or if it was something like we would go drive around until we had a lemonade stand and I'd be like, go do it.
Okay.
Because you have to just like, in my opinion, if you're not in that mindset to give, you're not going to be in the mindset to, it's like, like ask for what you're worth. Like, this car's $50,000.
Man, I freaking love that because I think, I don't know, kids are growing up in this system of education that is really not conditioning them for entrepreneurship at all.
No.
And so if they're not getting those lessons to see like, hey, I can actually get paid what I'm worth.
Yeah.
Man, think how much that's going to just set them up for the future if they can get more of those. Right. So I actually homeschool my 4 kids. We've never sent my kids to school. And part of that is because of like my reading experience and being told I'm retarded. Okay. So like
we're not,
I don't even know if I'm allowed to say that. I'm sorry if that offends somebody, but like, that's what people call me. Okay. Yeah. In the '90s, it was okay.
And I like it.
You know? Yeah. It is what it is.
Yeah. Like, it's part of the story.
But you know, okay. So I would say one of my biggest challenges, even in my Warrior Ethos program, when I get new entrepreneurs or more, and they're not even new. Most of my clients, they own a business. They already have some success because it does take money to get into real estate. I don't care. Now you might have to take it from different avenues, but if you really want to move quickly in real estate, it's nice to have something to pull from, you know? And most of these people that I'm working with, their number one problem is fear. And the fear is stemming from kind of a lack of confidence in what they are worth, you know? And that's
a hard one to teach people.
It's so hard. And that's why I pull so much on the heart and mind Those are my first two sections. Until you get those two sections right, I really don't want you moving forward. Mm-hmm. Because without a good heart, a purified heart, one that knows why they are there, I'm sorry, your mind is not going to be in the space to do what you need to do. Because it is it's a freaking grind, bro. It is a challenging, challenging thing to be an entrepreneur. I remember, for years, my wife, she's always been supportive, but also she loves stability, right?
That's how my wife is.
She grew up with a dad that was just solid. Yeah. Her dad is just solid across the board, you know? Always had a good job. They've always lived in a nice home for the most part.
Yeah,
right?
very comfortable.
And now he owns a mobile X-ray ultrasound company. And
oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Freaking, hand over fist.
Dude, he does.
Let's just put it that way. Yeah.
Yeah. And
you had to say it was X-ray.
Intimidating sometimes. Yeah. It's intimidating because I am not like him. Right. He is Mr. Safety. I think most of his investments are government bonds. Like that's how safe he is, you know? Wow. And so for a while there, my wife was just like, oh, I don't know about this, but okay. You know?
Yeah.
And I tell my students this because I think it's a really important lesson to learn. Cause oftentimes you have in couples, especially you'll have one that's more risk averse and one that's fine with it. Right.
Yeah.
They're just totally okay.
And
you gotta find some way to come together because if you don't, it's going to cause a lot of problems.
Right.
And I remember the first time my wife and I were having some issues and, you know, it was about a lot of things, right? I had come off of a deployment. I was very in my own head. There was a lot just going on. We were just having babies. Yeah. So no one was sleeping. And I started a new job with brand makers at the time. And my wife's just like, this is insane. So anyway, our CEO at brand makers, I was telling him about it. Cause he's not just our CEO. If I could tell you about one guy that I just absolutely love, it's this guy.
Yeah.
He has changed my life. Like literally changed my life. I said to him, I was like, James, what should I do, man? Like my wife and I are struggling with this, that, and the other. And he says to me, he's like, Austin, this is going to sound really bad. You got to make more money. And I was like,
yeah.
What? Like, what does that got to do with anything? He's like, look, I'm not telling you that money makes you happy. It doesn't.
Yeah.
But in the situation that you're in right now, it gives you more options. It gives you more freedom. And that is a very powerful thing. And that is something that will give your relationship more consistency. It will give your relationship a more steady boat to sail on, you know, like that was the year. It was either that year or the next year that I was like, okay, I'm going to go for a million. Right now. I don't know if I did it right. Because, you know, like I said, I think I was neglecting some of those other things that I could have been staying a little more strong at, but it was a great lesson. I don't regret any of it because it taught me so much, you know?
Yeah. The idea about money is like, it doesn't make you happy, but it damn sure doesn't make you sad.
Yeah.
Like it, and I know we were talking about this earlier, but like it solves so many problems. Like everything is a little bit easier because I grew up poor, man.
Yeah.
You anybody who tells me money doesn't make you happy, I'll go down my street where I grew up and go pay everybody's electric bill. That's like maybe 80 bucks. Yeah. Maybe it's 80 bucks.
Yeah.
And watch how freaking that place figuratively will light up. Everybody will be so much lighter. And I'm like, so I get what you're saying.
Yes.
You know, guys who can't pay an $80.
Okay. Bill. And so here's how the story kind of plays.
Okay. Yeah. Out. Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah.
So he tells me that and I'm like, you know what? I trust you. And he was like, dude, my wife and I have been through like six different counselors. He's like, we've had ups and downs our whole marriage. But he's like, I'm telling you, when I started to make more money, things just got less stressful. You know, like we're going to still have stress. You're still going to have, you know, fights and all this and whatever.
Yeah.
But he's like, but at least you don't have to worry about the mortgage being paid. At least you don't have to worry about this being paid. You know,
yeah, you can work on yourself.
So yeah, you can work on yourself. You can even take time to do that, you know? So I was like, okay. I'm going to do that. Right. Yeah. So I remember it was probably, I don't know, 3-4 months later. And, I get this check and dude, before this, I mean, imagine in the military, you're making a hot 40 grand a year, maybe.
Right.
Right. I mean, you have some perks with like your healthcare and whatever else.
Yeah. You got a lot of stuff. Yeah.
You're not making a lot of money. Even when you're deployed, I think they give you like, Combat hazard pay is like $600 extra a month. That's what your life's worth. Family separation pay is like $350 a month. So you're making maybe an extra $1,000 to put your life on the line.
Wow.
Yeah. That's so crazy. It's really not anything. Anyway, so I get this check and it's $38,000. And I was like, it was the biggest check I'd ever made, right? I was just like, oh my gosh. And I didn't tell my wife for almost 2 weeks because I wanted to celebrate it for myself first.
Yeah.
You know? And then my next check was like $16,000. So, in 1 month, you know, I made almost $50,000.
Yeah.
And I remember going to my wife and I was like, hey, you want to see something cool? And I just pulled up our checking account. It was the first, dude, we had lived page, like most we'd ever had in our checking was maybe when we got a tax return, right? Like $4,000 to $6,000 or something.
Right.
You know? But most of the time it was paycheck to paycheck, you know?
Right.
And when she saw that, you know what she said? She's like, you're so hot right now. And so what my buddy had said was true.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I'm not going to say it did not solve all of our problems. It's not like it necessarily raised our level of happiness, but it, you know what it did? It made my wife feel secure.
Yeah. And that's the difference between
women care about security. More than anything else. And that's security in the relationship,
right?
Security in finances, security in their safety. Mm-hmm. Like those three things, if you can nail that down, I argue your wife, you will never have your relationship end.
Yeah.
At least not on their end.
Right. Well, and I think what's cool about that too, is like, that's the difference. And that's the difference between, you know, being like a person who understands the differences in gender.
Yes.
You know, it's like, that's what, like my wife could care less about because she's very much similar, and that's just, you know, women in general. But yeah, dude, like if that's all that she had, and by the way, that's also the conversation, because my wife can have all three of those things. And if we were making only $30,000 a year, she'd be fine. Right.
Sure.
And so that's the conversation that we have to have together.
The amount is not the, you know,
it's not the, there's no threshold.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's something you agree on, you right. know,
but that's wild, dude.
I mean, cause even right now, so I had an experience where I got this home run deal. Okay. Grand slam deal. It was 10 micro cabins on like 2.5 acres of commercial land. We purchased it for $1.6 million. At the time, I didn't have the money. Like, I was like, the lady came to me. So it was an off-market deal, well below book value. And I'm like, gosh, how do I do it? Because I had just bought the house that we're remodeling now for like $720,000. So I was kind of cash poor, or just low, cash low.
I
hate the term poor.
But you're not
poor. It's just like, you have ups and downs. It fluctuates, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, gosh, how am I going to do this? You know? And I was like, well, I got to figure it out.
Yeah.
And so I found two partners. I got a private loan for like $130K. I, you know, everything I could to get this deal. And we ended up doing an owner finance deal on $1.6 million for 4% interest over 15 years.
Wow.
Crazy.
That is a crazy deal.
Crazy. Those cabins cash flow during the busy months of tourism, they cash flow $50,000 to $60,000 a month.
Yeah.
$50,000 to $60,000 a month.
Yeah, it's a no-brainer.
No-brainer. Grand slam. Like, this does not happen almost ever.
Right. You just got to be in the right position.
And I remember just thinking to myself, oh my gosh, we have so many bills. Like, we have so much money going out every month. And I was kind of stressing, and my wife's like, what are you doing? Why are you stressing? And it's crazy that, you know, the saying, more money, more problems.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily more money, more problems. It's more money, more responsibility.
Yeah.
You know, like anytime you've made another level, man, the amount of stuff that you're a steward over, the increase is huge.
Yeah.
And it's funny, that book, Extreme Ownership.
Yeah.
Jocko Willing. You
know? Yeah. Yeah. Lee Baffin.
And I'm not hating on that book. I think it's a great book, especially, but I think it should be Extreme Ownership of Your Thoughts. Because the fact is, you really don't own very much. At least in my opinion, I believe in God. I believe that this is God's green earth. I believe that we are just stewards.
Yeah.
And we are just trusted to care for the things that are offered us. Now, if we take that idea where you can own your thoughts, well, then maybe we should be extreme stewards, not extreme ownership, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It should be extreme stewardship. Like, how are you finding ways to care for this and make it even better than it came to you? You know, that's your responsibility.
I like it.
And if you own that thought, right, you're unstoppable.
Oh, amen, dude. I love that. Well, thank you so much, boss. I really appreciate you being here, Austin. Tell everybody before they leave where they can follow you if they want to sign up for your course or whatever, like however you want to sign off, man. Go ahead.
Yeah, man. So warriorethoslife.com. You can set a consult with me. I do a free consult where I actually walk you through the first step to the Warrior Ethos Life program. And then we are actually building a community called the Warrior Wingman, where you can get accountability with a wingman and kind of just meet your goals. If you want to find me on Instagram, it's Warrior Ethos Life. So very simple. And then just on Facebook, just Google my name. It's Austin Lefevre. It's kind of hard to spell, but you know, the last
it'll
name,
be on here.
Yeah, L-E-F-E-V-R-E. So Austin Lefevre.
Cool, man.
And yeah, that's probably the best way to find me.
Thank you, Bob.